Anyway, thank you all for joining us. John, always a pleasure. And Ed, you know, I've known Ed since mostly when he was a city manager and in Redwood City, just a little background. And the big tension in that job is whether you're going to maintain and manage in an efficient and competent way the infrastructure of a city and the city council. That's what they always don't talk about. And also, the other part is whether you really think civic engagement is something that's your job and to be taken seriously. And Ed was a leader in called the Innovation Group, so a group of city managers that really took this civic engagement seriously. I don't know of any other city manager I've met that cared more for citizen involvement and worked harder figuring how to make that work than you did in Redwood City. So I really have always appreciated what you stood for in the world. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think a little bit of context, background, many people maybe know what you're up to now, but I thought of telling us a little bit about Nextdoor.com and the backstory and why this is important. And how about just chatting? Give us a little background and texture
sure.
and landscape before we get specific.
Sure. So, as Peter said, I was a city manager. I was city manager for 24 years. And when I retired, I had two passions. One was to help cities learn how to build community, because I'd spent six years trying to do that in Redwood City. And one was to figure out how to help cities engage their people better. So by happen chance, which is often how it is, I met this individual who was developing a website. And I don't remember how we actually met, but we met Nirav. He's the CEO, founder of Nextdoor. And when I saw him, I said, wow, cities would kill for this. And he didn't know much about cities at all. He's a very, very successful entrepreneur here in Silicon Valley, developed a very successful company that he sold to eBay. And it was interesting what his team went through after they sold it to eBay. He kept a core group together. And they really spent a lot of time thinking about what their, quote, as you would probably guess, what's the next app? And what was interesting to me, and they spent 2 or 3 months doing this, what they really saw, and these are people who are really infused in Silicon Valley. That's what they know. And they know that there's all these social media groups that get set up. But what they actually saw and understood, which I thought was most interesting, was the one area where there was no group was the area where we live, our neighborhood. And it was just that concept that really drove them to say, you know, that's really important. And, you know, Facebook is great, but that's family and friends. And, you know, quite frankly, you don't have neighbors on Facebook. See, LinkedIn is great, but that's for professional colleagues. And you don't have your neighbors on that. And Twitter's fine. You follow something or somebody, but you never follow your neighbor. And where we invest most of our money in our house or whatever is where we live. And there was nothing that really helped people connect with their neighbors. And so that's the back. So that's what they said, you know, geez, we could do that. And then when I met them, I said, you know, I know you're trying to just do this with neighbors, but cities would love to use this, because part of that building community is connecting the citizens to the city. So that's sort of the 30,000 foot backstory.
That's great. So could you describe the product a little bit, Ed?
Sure. So Nextdoor is free to anybody, cities, and it's a private social network. But we designed it specifically, and the very basis of it, we designed it to connect neighbors to each other and to allow a city or a police department or, you know, to post into neighborhoods. So neighbors form neighborhoods and use Nextdoor as their method of communicating with each other. It's a very private site. We're real different than most of the others. You must use your real name. We do not allow anonymous people. You must use your real address, and we verify that you live there. And we write it, I'm not very techy, HTTPS. which means Google and Yahoo and Bing, nobody can search the site and no spammers get in. And in fact, we don't even let the city, who can post information into your neighborhood site, listen in, because this is really the neighbor's website. And our concept is to get neighbors talking over the internet, so that they will continue this discussion either over the fence line or the clothesline. Because we believe that it's very awkward to ask people, gee, you've lived on your block for 6 years. Why don't you walk up and down and knock and say howdy? You know, it's awkward. But you can connect using Nextdoor, and I'll describe a little bit how people use it for all sorts of things. But what inevitably happens is you connect over some task or request or something, and then you end up meeting those people in real life. And so we firmly believe that, yes, social media is great for entering into the discussion, but it is our drive to make sure that people go further than that and actually meet face-to-face, that it's not just a virtual community. It's our actual neighborhood, our community.
Interesting. Tell me a little bit about how it connects to the city.
So the way we do this, we approach cities, and we're in about 100, and I don't know, we're in 170 cities or something. And so one of my roles, and it came from my passion, I said, man, I'd love to get cities, is that cities can now begin to connect to people in really relevant ways. Your city uses Facebook, and then they post something on Facebook, and, you know, maybe you're on the city Facebook page, but how many times do you go to it? And what we allow the city to do is they can post something into Neighborhood A because it only affects Neighborhood A, or they can post to Neighborhood A, B, and C, and they don't have to, it's not relevant to the rest of the community. So they can post messages, individual messages, to one neighborhood, or the same message to a group of neighborhoods, or the same message to all neighborhoods. And then we also allow the city to post urgent alerts. So anyone who joins Nextdoor is asked, gee, would you like to receive an urgent alert from your neighbor and or the city, if the city is part of it? And almost everybody says yes and provides us with their cell number. And so the city can send out an urgent alert to a neighborhood and say, I would like you to shelter in place because something's happening. And they don't need to worry the rest of the city. Or they can send an urgent alert to someone else to say, there is a police incident in your community, in your neighborhood. Here's what it is. There's no need to be alarmed. And they can calm people down. So it's used in tons of ways. People use it. Neighbors themselves use it. When the tornadoes went through really bad last year, we had a bunch of people using it as a way to say it's touched ground, and they just put an urgent alert out to their neighbors. Now, certainly the city's trying to do that too, but the more people can do that, the better. So that's in essence how the city would make use of it. The city can't listen in to the discussions going on in the neighborhood, and we did that purposely. And as a city manager of 24 years, I got to tell you, I learned something. When the city is not in the room, people speak very civilly. Now, 37 years in government, if someone had asked me, my biggest concern was, will the discussion be civil? And so we beta tested it in a city that I knew well, in my own city. And we listened in and told people we were for a year. And I was stunned at how civil it is. But it finally dawned on me, when the city's not in the room and they're using their real name and they're using their address and they're only talking to their neighbors, they're pretty civil. When the city walks in the room, it's sort of interesting, Peter. All of a sudden, the fact that we're in presence, so we're in a meeting or something, they really revert from citizen back to customer. And they like to name, blame, complain, and find fault. And it was something amazing to me, because I was never able to be in the room and not be in the room, in essence. And through Nextdoor, I was just monitoring posts. And obviously, we had told people that the city can't listen in. And I watched how they behave. And what a difference.
And I think this is John. And I think that's a great insight. It seems to me that we have almost developed a culture where the very idea of city resident relationship is to bitch and moan. I mean,
yeah.
that it's all one way. It has only to do with the assumption that the city is the main problem. We're trying to get them to do what we want them to do. And that just sort of builds a lack of real civic engagement because the prior question is, what are we prepared to do? So
exactly.
I think your observation is right on.
Plus, I thought the insight that citizen is customer is what you're trying to overcome.
Exactly.
You know, as city manager, and especially when there's people are concerned, you end up in the room having to defend yourself.
Right. Exactly. And it's sort of this, I think we're stuck as cities, we're stuck in the bitch and fix.
Yeah, right.
they complain and we fix. And too many cities believe that is their sole role. We're just to go out and fix things for people versus, you know, there's a partnership model that could be real different. And so that's why I think social media at the neighborhood level, I think everything, we did a lot of stuff in Redwood City. And after doing this for 6 years, we learned we were doing a lot of macro stuff at the beginning. And you guys, both of you guys came in and spoke to groups. So we're doing it macro. What we learned in that process is you can move okay in that arena, but you hit a glass ceiling. And until you bury back down and start at the local level, really at the hyper-local level,
mm-hmm.
you can't go as far. And so we really, after 2 or 3 years of sort of learning and fumbling around, went back to saying, you know, we got to start doing things at the neighborhood level and let it bubble up to the city level. And that was much more successful for us. And
you know,
go ahead, John.
Yeah, that idea, I think we've seen over and over again, institutions of almost any kind are about things in general. But at the neighborhood level, it's everything in particular. And so it's hard for governments or schools or even businesses to connect well at the local level because they are generalists trying to deal with situations that are particular and personal. And so that's why it seems to me next door is a wonderful bridge in that sense.
It's what I find interesting is, and I speak to this for myself too as an ex-city manager, we have been way too paternalistic as we think of our residents. They're very, very smart. They're very, very capable. And a quick short story, there was a group of residents who were connecting over next door, and they were all on propane. And because there was no natural gas. And so one gentleman just asked the obvious question of his neighbors, my contract's coming out, how much do you pay? How much are you rest of you paying? And all of a sudden he didn't know all these neighbors, but he got all these different prices. And it was another gentleman who just piped in. He said, you know, I'm a retired federal contract person. What I think we ought to do is all of us agree that when next time our contract is due, I'll go out and do a bid. And so he actually, on his own, privately, just went out and told the five major propane groups, you got a bid, and you submit them to my house at such and such a time. And they bitched and moaned, but they did. And everybody had agreed to use the lowest bidder, and they all saved money. So people are very smart and taking care of themselves if they just have some of the tools, and sometimes social media can be one of those tools.
And you, I don't know if you really specifically said, what are the major areas that people focus on in these conversations?
So what we find is the way people tend to use Nextdoor, roughly, and I'll round up, but about 20% of the time they're using it, 22% for recommendations. People are asking neighbors, do you know a good plumber, do you know a good landscape architect, do you know a tutor? We trust our neighbors. There's lots of national studies out there. We trust our neighbors more than Yelp and anyone else. So about 15%, and that area would be sort of Yelp and Angie's List. Think of that area. The next is classified. Think of eBay and Craigslist. People sell, buy, give away. And what we're beginning to notice, which I think is wonderful, people are starting to borrow tools. Now, I'm a really old guy. When I grew up, everybody borrowed something from somebody, and we're beginning to see that. So that's about 15%. About 20% is crime and safety. It's a very important 20% because obviously that's the baseline. You all want to be safe. And so that's about 20%. About 20%, people are just talking about their community and their neighborhood issues, their city issues. And about 10% of the time, they're planning events. It makes it so easy to have a block party or a National Night Out party or a Halloween party because you don't stuff doors or something. You just put it out and say, shoot, what weekend would be best? And then bingo, you get what people think, and then you say, okay, everyone from A to B, A to C, you know, you bring salads, C to F, you bring this, you know, and it's so easy to organize. And so we're really, one of the things we're trying to do with Nextdoor is get people to meet people as well. So that's a big important thing. So those are the big five, kind of five areas that it's used for.
And Ed, what are the boundaries? I mean, when you say your neighbor's a neighborhood,
yeah.
How do you scale it? I live in a place.
We give guidelines. Now, we know nationally because we're I think there's 33,000 neighborhoods now in the United States. We kind of know the size that works best, and we sort of say, don't do anything smaller than 250 households. They could be apartment units, townhouses, we don't care. Because there's just not enough critical mass, because not everyone's going to do it. Enough critical mass to make it work. We ask people, don't make it over 3,000 households, because that's kind of so big that people tend to lose connection. 500 to 1,000 becomes really quite active neighborhoods. We have exceptions at both ends that work, but that's sort of our guideline based on when we look at everybody and which neighborhoods are most effective. That seems to be the area that has the most efficacy.
Now, do these neighborhoods have therefore geographic boundaries? If I want
So someone wants to found a neighborhood. Excuse me, I'm working off a cold. There's a little process they go through. It's not very complicated. It's going to be technical, but you will be asked to draw boundaries, street boundaries,
mm-hmm.
that encompasses about somewhere between 250 to minimum to 3,000. And so people draw those boundaries and they name them. And generally, people get it right. There's always disagreement. So it's, oh, that should be in this name. But generally, and we can morph those. Somebody says, well, we'd like to expand into that, and we allow that to happen.
Uh-huh. Good.
So
is it,
we allow
a question that's pretty interesting. Somebody, the Tattered Flag, is involved or knows about in the UK, streetlife.com. And he said in that, which sounds similar to Nextdoor, business people have started to co-opt it to advertise their stuff. And,
yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about what some of the risks of a site like
that? Yeah. So what we actually do, that's a risk because people don't want that. And that's something we're looking at in a different way. When we draw boundaries, we look very carefully at whether we're in a commercial area, and we leave commercial areas out. So there are people who are, you know, it's a mixed area. We ask people not to advertise on it. And actually, our ultimate revenue model goes along with our mission. Our mission is to create community. And one of the things we know is that local small businesses are part of any community. They support Little League and soccer leagues, and inevitably, and this is based on 24 years' experience as city manager, you know, the small businesses is the one that's helping the small school do its fundraiser and something because they usually live and work. So ultimately, we're going to allow not the Costco's and the Walmart's, they know what to do. We're going to allow the local small businesses to post their name, address, website, and a tagline. You know, I don't know, the best family-run toy store on Main Street. Because actually neighbors, what we found is that when neighbors are giving recommendations on their own, they say, and so-and-so is local, and so-and-so is local. So we're beginning to understand that people would like to shop local, but they don't know what's local. And so we really want to sort of encourage that process of these are local businessmen in your city, and they can advertise but not post. So they can ultimately, we're a year away from that, they can pay to put advertising on the site. But we think that's so important because we do know that a community is made up, John, you've always said it, it's association of associations. And the small business people are part of one of those associations. So that's how we've sort of decided that we want to really sort of deal with the business side of it.
Any other downsides?
Well, I guess there's always downsides. A lot of people, some cities think that it's going to be like another Facebook and Twitter. One of the things that's interesting, because that's actually killing cities, they are so busy monitoring everything that is said and responding to it that they're overwhelmed by it. We actually built this site so they can't monitor it. And we tell people they're not monitoring it. And we make it so that it's not easy for people to go through our site and get to somebody. Every citizen knows how to get to somebody in the city if they want. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to treat them like idiots and provide them with another venue just to complain and bitch. And so we really set it up so that we're exactly opposite that. We don't want people to have easy access on that site, because if there's something important, then they're adult enough to pick up the phone, dial 311, go to the internet. They know how to get in touch with people. So we don't want to encourage them to, you know, be one of these things. The big site that a lot of people have now is they're using these sites where you can take a picture of something and post it. So people are running around taking pictures, fix this, fix that, fix this, fix that. It's killing cities.
Can you, you mentioned that one of the categories has to do with communications back and forth about safety and crime. Can you characterize what that kind of discussion is about? What are they saying?
It's interesting. They'll talk about a suspicious person or a suspicious, I'll give you an example, I guess, in a city nearby here. The city wasn't even involved in Nextdoor, so it's just the neighbors did this themselves. And there were these guys going door to door. And a bunch of neighbors said, hey, did these two guys come to your door? They're selling magazines. We've all seen it. They don't seem legit. And so one woman was part of the Nextdoor neighborhood. She decided that she took a picture of them through her front window as they came up. She talked to them. And then she sent the picture to an officer she knows. So I'm guessing, I don't know this for sure, I'm guessing she was part of a neighborhood watch or something. The officer actually sent somebody out. They investigated the guys. They took them back to their vehicle. And what they found was stolen property from two other robberies in other neighborhoods a couple of weeks ago. So it was interesting. So she posted back and said, oh, you know, you guys were right. And the cops arrested them. What was interesting was the neighbor's reaction. They said, and they talked amongst themselves, gee, it's great. We partnered with the police. Not the police with us. We partnered with the police. I think that's huge. And then they began to say, what else can we do to make this our neighborhood safe? So that's the kind of trip that we hope people will take. All of a sudden, they begin to realize they have some responsibility and accountability for the quality and safety of their neighborhood. And once that trips, then almost anything can happen.
That's great.
There's a question on the chat that says, is anyone aware of Nextdoor.com being used to initiate, support, or sustain village communities for older residents? Are there any themes that emerge?
So there is a Pew study out there. A lot of people say, well, there's a digital divide, and I just looked it up. This is 2011. 85% of the adults use the Internet, okay? So 85% of all the adults use the Internet. And by age, it is different, whereas 98% of the under 29 use it and about 56% of the over 65. But what we have found is that another kind of story, there was an older woman living alone, and her adult kids got her on Nextdoor, and she did this cute post. She posted and said, she literally posted a stream of consciousness, "Oh, hi, neighbors, this is easy." and she said, "Oh, by the way, all my tomatoes are in. And I can't eat them all, so they're in a basket in the front porch. Please come and take one, but knock and say howdy." The very next day, I thought that was an interesting post. The very next day, she says, "I'm so sorry. All my tomatoes are gone, but I met 10 new neighbors, and I can't wait for my squash to come." So what happened was this lady went from sort of alone, apparently, as best I could determine, to the neighborhood has now adopted her as the, sort of the neighborhood grandma. So it is a way, the internet is a way to break down those normal barriers between age groups. If someone is talking about selling something or giving a recommendation or planning a party, you don't care what age they are. And people are included, not excluded.
So this is that's great. Maybe this is a moment, Maggie, to stop and invite calls, because there's a lot of comments on the chat that I think would be great to have Ed respond to, verbally. So can you do that, Maggie?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. There's lots of questions and some comments going on in the chat room, and I'd like to share some of those. But if you are calling in, what we ask you to do is press *8 on your telephone, and I'll see that you're in a queue, and we can get you on the phone as well. So for now, let's see, there are a couple, and Peter, it sounds like you're watching along on the chat. Here's one that has come up. It says the neighborhood map that Nextdoor is using is incorrect for my neighborhood in Cincinnati. Local folks haven't corrected it.
So there's a dilemma that we have faced. There are two values. There is the value of an individual starting a neighborhood, and that individual may not understand that there is a neighborhood association with a set number of boundaries. So there is always this, there's the value of using set neighborhoods that have long been in existence, and we don't want to step on that value. But there's also a value of a group of people who have set up a neighborhood, it's working well, there's 50 to 100 people on it, and they're comfortable with that neighborhood. So it'll be a forever problem that we deal with, and we understand people feel very strongly about the limits of their neighborhood. Within Nextdoor, one of the things we've allowed is you can post into nearby neighborhoods. So even though I'm in Stafford Park, that's my neighborhood, I can post into all my surrounding neighborhoods. So if whoever put Stafford Park together hadn't done it based on a neighborhood association, because it was a little bigger, then I could still post into neighboring neighborhoods, next door neighborhoods, that would include that area. We're soon to have a device where the city, when they're posting, can overlay a different set of boundaries. So there are next door boundaries within the city, and they can overlay neighborhood association boundaries and post into the neighborhood association. So we're working on a way to sort of rectify that from the city standpoint. And we do know that can be a difficulty for people in the neighborhood.
So Maggie, right. Anybody in line for a phone call?
Yes, we just have someone here from South Central Florida. So I will unmute that person. Hello, this is Maggie.
Hi, my name's Caleb.
Hi, Caleb. You've got Peter, John, and Ed on the line too.
Hi, everyone. It's been a really interesting discussion so far. My question for Ed is, I think I have a clear understanding of your intended purpose for this software. I'm curious, in your experience, what are people using it for most? Have you noticed any trends? Are they using it more for safety issues or organizing events?
I'm sorry, I missed that last part.
The question is, how are people actually using them in your experience?
Did anyone catch that? I'm sorry, the car's going by when he talks.
Yeah, he said, how are people using it in your experience?
People are using it in sort of almost precisely, because those are the figures I came from. The figures I gave you, about 22% for recommendations, about 15% for classified, about 24% what we call civic discussions, about 24% health and safety, about 10% for planning events, and there's a miscellaneous probably 7 in there that don't reach any of the categories. One of the new uses that we see of this is for resiliency after a natural disaster, and I can talk a little later about some of the changes we're going to try to hopefully include so that neighborhoods can be more resilient to themselves after a natural disaster.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, and thanks for calling in.
Any other calls, Maggie?
No other calls, but some okay. comments in the chat. Let's see, trying to keep up with it. So there was one question, but I think, Ed, you probably just answered it. The question was, does Nextdoor.com have the capability to help neighbors organize local events with one another?
Yeah, there's a whole tab, which is kind of interesting. It just says you can click on an event, and what's kind of neat about it is you click on it and you can propose dates so that you can figure it out. And then you can do an RSVP. So as neighbors RSVP, you will actually, their profile will jump up. So you can say, oh, that's Tom and Jim over on Iris Street. And oh, that's so-and-so from King Street. And that's so-and-so. And so, you know, it gives you, you'll know actual numbers. And it makes the organizing of a block party, which we're really in favor of, so much easier because, you know, when I was city manager, to get block parties, people had to Xerox some flyers and pass them around, and, gee, everybody was going to be out that weekend. Oh, well, we've already planned it, you know, and so it makes it much easier.
You know, there's two, there's a theme here for somebody, you know, about the commercialization and, you know, for what we've seen is that everything starts free. And then as the revenue model is needed, you know, you have to stop burning capital at some point.
Yeah.
It becomes commercialized.
Unless somebody thinks that's just a nasty word, we live in
a little bit
world. And what we're trying to do is do it in a way that we think helps the neighbors. When we go through this process, we have what we call leads forms. So, by the way, every time a neighborhood is formed, there's a founder. He or she is the person who founds it. And then there are usually at least 2 or 3 leads. We generally ask some people if they like to be leads because they've invited a lot of people. And we have a leads form. So before we go there, we will be asking people, well, how would this be helpful to you? We have to make money in order to provide the service for free. We have venture capital money now, but at some point you don't have it. So the question is, how do you make enough money to pay for this service to allow people to connect with one another through this? And we think that local small businesses is the way to do it. We won't do pop-up ads. We don't do banner ads. And the most important thing is we will never sell your information even to the people who will put up a little ad on it. We will never sell your information, unlike another major social media network who keeps saying they don't and do, which is why I dropped off of that social media network. We will never do that, period. And that's part of the privacy thing that we think are so important, and it's that trust, we think, that really makes us different than some of the other social media sites.
So you rejected the idea of either a subscription or an elite status or a Kickstarter kind of funding model.
We don't want to ever charge people for this because then all of a sudden you start to say who can and can't come on. And all I can say to this person is people, at least our initial sort of research into this, And we've been talking to neighbors who are on next door. The idea of their the idea of their local businesses doing a very tasteful post, not a big banner ad or nothing that glares at you, you have to click off, is not at all repulsive to people. They actually, people would like to know what the local businesses are. They don't know that there is a toy store that maybe they could go to instead of Toys R Us. They don't know that. And they like to know those kind of things. They don't know that there's a local architect in town. They don't know, you know, that Jake does plumbing and he has to live in the same city. And so people don't know that. And actually, it makes a difference to people. They trust this people a little more.
To support that thought, there's also local businesses that don't have a physical presence. And I know especially in poor neighborhoods, there's all kinds of economic changes going on.
Absolutely.
So this would be a vehicle for people who don't have a storefront.
Yes, absolutely.
So let their neighbors know what's able to
do. Some people are tutors. Some people are music teachers. They have no way of getting the information out.
Yeah. You know, I remember with Craigslist was free for a long time, and they did research and say, well, what would you be willing to pay for? And the recruiting, hiring, you know, looking for employees was something where the person posting would be willing to pay. So I can see where you're headed with that. That makes sense. Maggie, you'll interrupt if you want to ask your question.
Right. I was just about to, that we do have another caller from New York, so I'll go ahead and take this caller.
Hello?
Hello, and welcome.
Hey, my name is Tony from New York. I've got just two questions. First, thanks for taking the time to do this. It's been really great. I was surprised by the large number as far as households that you recommend, up to 3,000. That struck me as counterintuitive to community. I'm thinking in terms of like the 150 that you see sometimes in the literature. I wonder if you could speak to that. And then also, how do you mitigate the neighbor that just isn't on the internet or just doesn't do this kind of a thing? How do you keep that person engaged? Do you have recommendations to make that happen? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. The guidelines that we give, the minimum 250, the max 300, we have found that just through experience, since we have millions of people on now, that not everyone's going to join. That's just, we understand that. That's not the thing. So you won't get that many people on, you know, maybe 30-40% join. So you've cut your numbers down substantially anyway. We've just noticed that to make a site useful, there has to be sufficient activity that when I post something and say, gee, does anyone have a power washer I could borrow tomorrow? It has to be a large enough group that someone will say, yeah, I do. Otherwise, if it doesn't help you, then you don't use it. So it needs to be large enough so that it becomes helpful to people when they're making recommendations and or being concerned about something. The one thing we do allow, which I didn't mention, within a large neighborhood, let's say you had 1,000, people can form groups within that 1,000. They're part of the larger group, but they're a group. So we've done this as a way to pull out these gated communities and also allow people like HOAs to have their own private discussions. So I could be a member of an HOA with 100 members.
Say what an HOA is.
Housing Homeowners Association. So a homeowners association, condos, townhouses, they all have them. So I can be a member of that association, which I am if I bought in, and have a private discussion with those members by clicking that group. However, as a neighbor in the larger group, I hear what all my neighbors are saying. So we've tried to allow for people to build small affinity groups within the neighborhood. We get a lot of groups that are dog walking groups, hiking groups within a neighborhood because, you know, they're trying to find out who else goes for walks in the morning. And so they're pulling themselves together by interest. So we allow those smaller groups. They can be public groups, which means anyone can join them, or like an HOA, they could be a private group. So that's how we try to allow for people to have smaller. We know there's a couple of cul-de-sacs that just have their own cul-de-sac group because they just want a little private discussion with their 10 ten houses.
Ed, have you ever looked at what the patterns are in terms of interest groups that get formed at the local level?
Yeah. So one of the things we're working on is groups that can cross neighborhoods. And we think that's even more powerful. So you still have privacy in your neighborhood. But like book clubs, people try to start them, but even in a something like a neighborhood of 1,000, there may not be enough people who want to be part of a book club to make it worthwhile. So we're going to allow people to go eventually build these affinity groups across neighborhoods within the city. Dog walking is big. jogging is big. We've seen parent groups. We've seen an investing group. We've seen neighborhood watch is big. So a lot of people, you know, are just on their own. They say, oh, well, why don't we put all our neighborhood watch people on this? So they form that. So there's all these kind of groups that are forming that we think are pretty interesting. Ultimately, we want to expand this. We know that one of the most important things is the community that you live in, and that's the basis. And we think that the power of connecting neighbors is really huge. We also know that anyone who lives in a community, if you're a parent, you're also a member of a school community.
Yeah.
And we're looking at how can you be a private member of your neighborhood, but also a private member of your school community, and also a private member of your church community and or any community. So we understand, John, community is an association of associations. We take that very serious and say, how can we do that on the internet in a way to maintain the privacy, but allow people to be members of different groups and also be private in those groups? So that's something that we're working on and will be in the future.
Great. Can I ask you one other thing? You mentioned the various uses. And one category that you mentioned was civic engagement or civic discussions. Outside of questions having to do with safety and security. Can you describe what might be going on in that space?
Yeah, people ask a lot of questions. Gee, what's happening? Somebody's tearing down this building. Does anyone know what's going on? So a lot of informational kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we're not great at, I don't think our platform is great at having an extended sort of civic engagement discussion around a topic. And so what we actually recommend to people, I know these people, I like them. Peak Democracy does a much better job at that. And we sort of send people to Peak Democracy and they send people to us because civic engagement and community building is the flip side of the same coin. Oftentimes people start to engage in their community and then they become very civic oriented and want to engage in a particular discussion. Sometimes they start engaging around a particular discussion, they meet people, and they want to do more to plan community. We find that one flows to the other back and forth. We're sort of more on the community building platform side. And if the city wants to do a major discussion across all neighborhoods about growth or some big hot topic, we think that, the Peak Democracy probably provides a little better venue for that.
And that's a site that people who are listening can find easily?
Yeah, just peakdemocracy.com. And they charge money, but I've seen them and I've worked with them. They know, they get this. They absolutely get this. They get public records, and they know how to do this to meet city needs and legality stuff. And so they're really very good at it, yeah.
Good.
I think that's a great way you have of responding to that, Ed. I think the role of the city is critical. And the risk of the city co-opting this or using it too much, I think, is a serious concern.
Yeah.
What happens is something works and then institutions get interested.
Yeah.
whether it's a commercial institution or you know, whatever, as soon as institutions get interested, then the quality that gave rise to it disappears, whether it's commercial or food business, right? I think the more any thoughts you have about the, kind of the future for how...
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, so we actually warn cities to be careful and to post, you know, if you know, post, especially at the beginning, we tell them post no more than 3 times a week. We're soon developing, in fact, we're pretty close to that, where if people want to, by the way, anyone can mute anybody. In other words, I have a neighbor next door and I just don't like him or her, whatever, I can mute him, but nobody knows I've muted him or her. We will allow that also to so that you can mute any the city. But if you don't want to hear from them, then we don't want you to hear from them. And that's an individual choice, not a group choice, not a neighborhood choice, not a city choice. Mm-hmm. The only thing we will not allow you to mute is an urgent alert. If you've asked for urgent alerts, we think that they're important enough that you can't turn them off. If you don't want them, that's fine. But if you ask for them, you will get an urgent alert. So that's, but yeah, people can say, I don't want to hear from the city. I don't want to hear from the police department. I just want to hear from my neighbors. And that's what they'll hear. And we also provide them with the ability to say, anytime there's a post, send it to me. Or, you know, people need different things. Most people say, no, just give me a daily digest. It's one email at the end of the day that says what's happened in your neighborhood. We also allow them to say, no, I don't even want to get that. I'll come to the site when I want to. We really are trying to say, look, these are all adults, and they can figure out how they want to use this site to the best of their abilities. And so that's what we do. We allow people to set all sorts of preferences up for themselves. And so that's huge for us.
There's another question that we've got a lot on the chat. I don't know if you have access. You're busy talking. But one is, has it been used for political purposes?
No. So it's interesting. The city, and this is what I tell the cities, they don't own it, they don't operate it, they don't maintain it, and they don't have any liability for it. Right now, we have had politicians who want to get on it, and we're the good thing about being a private sector, we're just saying no. We will allow, eventually, we will allow people who are within the government structure, because not all posting will come from the PIO. There's other people who want to post information. But we will have it on a subscription basis. In other words, if a particular politician would like to use it to inform, and you know, look, I've worked with city councils, and so I know politicians, and I know they always want to get their name out. But I also know that some of them are very sincere, and they want to help their people. So they want to put out good information, not just to get elected. But we will allow people to subscribe. So in other words, you have to make a choice. Yes, I would like to hear my politician. And then you and only you would hear that. So we're working on that as well. And again, it's all about choice by the individuals. If somebody wants to hear from their politician, then why shouldn't we allow it? But if others don't, then they should be able to completely turn that off and not even hear it. And so that's how we keep dealing with this issue of choice, by saying it's not A or B, it's A and B, and you all are bright enough to choose.
Ed, isn't there another possibility? I know in many neighborhoods, the most influential thing that happens politically is one neighbor saying, I think this candidate is a good candidate. And, you know, you see the signs up in the yard.
Yeah.
Can't somebody... go on their neighborhood site and say, I want to commend Maria Jones. She's wonderful. You could do that.
We ask people not to do that. It's amazing how people are paying attention to our guidelines. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we find is that people, when you're using your real name and your real address,
mm-hmm.
and someone does something like that, and someone will say, you know, Joe, we don't want this site to become political. And then two or three people will jump in and say, yeah, I agree with Mary. Joe usually never does it again. Mm-hmm. Self-enforcement is very effective. We always think that we have to have rules and stuff, but we find self-enforcement to be incredibly effective.
Very
and people make their site as to how they want it.
Mm-hmm.
If a particular neighborhood wants it, then why would we tell them not to have it?
Yeah.
So the fact is that, you know, we have very, very bright citizens and residents out there,
yeah,
and we just need to treat them as such. And they monitor this own site. I mean, there are flags, and so we're very careful. We, by the way, just for people to know, anyone who's an SRO, sexually registered offender, we look at all those addresses and we cancel them. So nobody who lives at that address can be on the site. So that's the only thing we do, but we do that for safety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we find it a very safe site, and we allow people to do kind of within rules what they want to do. Again, I was so surprised at how civil people are. One person did something that was, they thought they were filling out their profile. And their profile, they were a realtor. And so they were telling a lot about themselves as a realtor in their profile. And what she invariably did was to hit the wrong button, and it went out as a post. And it was interesting. There were like 4 instant comments, this actually happened in my neighborhood, about how angry people were. I called the lady, and she said, oh, my God, I was so sorry. That's not what I meant to do. And so I posted and said, she did that inadvertently. She was putting that on her profile. So thank you all for commenting. And it's amazing how forgiving people are. Someone says, oh, I'm so sorry, I accused you of doing it. So people left to their own devices are pretty nice.
It's great.
And you
so
encourage responsibility by visibility.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, there's no anonymity. Anonymity does seem to me that an awful lot of the negative stuff grows out of the Internet's possibility for anonymous stuff.
And we verify that you live at that address, and there's 3 ways we do it. I don't need to go into it. But so everybody knows that who they're talking to is exactly their neighbors, and there's no spam coming in, and no one's listening in. So all of a sudden it sets up a whole different environment for that discussion.
Great.
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes. Maggie, I assume nobody else is on the wants to talk.
Nobody else on the phone, no, Peter.
Okay, great. And we've got there's a great conversation going on the chat line, so I appreciate those of you that are writing in on the chat. It's great to see your comments to each other and finding each other. Here's a practical question. What buttons do you use to get in the telephone? Oh, what is it, Maggie? *8?
*8 if you'd like to get on the line.
So guest 24, if you'd like to ask a question, get on the line, try *8, and we'll see if we can sneak you in.
I was just going to say one last feature that we really think is important is, I stole this from John, we're going to, in the profile, we hope to change it in the future so that people can list their assets and gifts. We think that's really important around a disaster. Gee, I'm a contractor. I'm a nurse. Gee, I'm a somebody. And all of a sudden, you have online, you have a list of the assets, and I work at a bottled water company. Oh, that would be helpful if during a disaster. So people begin to know how they can help themselves and be resilient during a disaster.
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
One more thought. I know you want people to meet each other. So your major vehicle, you said that 10% or more do a planning events.
Oh,
any other
advice? We've partnered up with a couple things. We're trying to kind of, kickstart that. So we've partnered up with National Night Out, and we've actually encouraged people to plan National Night Out events. We did a really cute thing during Halloween where you could click on your site and say, I'm giving trick-or-treat candy. And then we tried to convince people to have Halloween parties. We did the same during Christmas. Gee, take a picture of your house with your Christmas lights on it and post it. And so there's a map on the site of all the people who are on it, and you can see who was doing trick or treat, who was giving out candy, who's lit their house, just ways of getting people in the neighborhood to say, oh, that's cool, let's meet these people. And so, I'm sure there's more we can do, But we're real busy sort of trying to, as a young company, trying to get it up and running and making sure that we stay with our mission, which is really to build community and connect people.
And we have guest number 24 on the line with us now.
Hi, how are you? This is Nevin Mindlin from Harrisburg. The question I have has to do with your organizing, which seems to be citywide from top down. And I'm wondering when you might allow for neighborhoods in a city-defined area organize themselves from the bottom up, because not that I wouldn't allow or we wouldn't be interested in hearing from the city, but I think that if you're trying to get civic engagement, you sort of disallow it by the way you're structured.
Well, maybe I misspoke then, because 90% of our neighborhoods are built by neighbors from the ground up. And the city can just post into those neighborhoods.
Well, but if we want to connect all the neighborhoods in the city, not just the adjacent ones, you need the city to set up that structure. That's what I was told. Unless there's another way to go about doing it, we'd like to
collected. Once the city wants to use Nextdoor, we allow them to post into any or all of the existing neighborhoods set up by individuals, neighbors.
Well, how do you get all the neighborhoods to get themselves together, whether the city wants to do it or not?
Well, I mean, that's a function of kind of what we try to do. And you know, we don't advertise a lot, but for whatever reason, a lot of people have heard about us. And so, like this, I mean, some people will go on there and say, geez, I'm gonna form a Nextdoor neighborhood in my neighborhood. And
I think I have one in my neighborhood. I want to connect with one that's 2 miles across town because we're trying to get the neighborhoods organized.
Ah, so I see. You're in a neighborhood and you want to connect with another neighborhood?
With other neighborhoods within the city. And we can't do it unless the city allows and organizes it.
Right, right. Okay. So what we don't have the capacity to do, we've heard this and we're trying to figure this out. What we don't have the capacity to do is to have neighborhood A connect with neighborhood B. Now, person A, who's in neighborhood A, can post into neighborhood B, but can't see into it. In neighborhood B, a person can post into neighborhood A, but can't see into it. We believe in this issue of privacy really strongly. We allow. Go ahead.
Let me interrupt you. Can I post into any neighborhood in Cincinnati?
Can you, Peter Block? No.
Like, that's what he's asking.
Okay, you can post into nearby neighborhoods, and you
nearby,
can, you,
but not citywide.
Not citywide, no.
And the argument, the thinking behind that.
Well, here's what we're concerned about, and we already are getting this in really big neighborhoods. I'm getting too many emails. The system is overloading. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get people to think and act very hyper locally.
Why do you allow the leaders to do it among themselves?
Well, now we have leads forums. So leads people can make a forum of all the leads people within their city. Yes, there are leads forums that people can set up, but there are usually two or three leads in every neighborhood. But that doesn't allow everybody in that neighborhood to do that. The leads.
Well, I was told we couldn't do that either.
The leads can talk to other leads.
Any lead in the city?
Yeah, send me an email at ed@nextdoor.com, and I'll get back to you.
Again.
Thank you for the question.
Leads can talk to other leads. In fact, we encourage leads forums to happen.
Yeah, maybe, so, Leslie, you can put Ed's how to contact Ed on the site.
Yeah, just ed@nextdoor.com.
Wonderful. This is great. Ed, any final thoughts? We're kind of out of time.
Well, my final thought was thanks to you guys. I mean, this is really, we're trying to take technology and do what you guys have been writing and talking and thinking about for a long time, and doing it in a way that it doesn't remain in technology. It starts there, but then morphs into face-to-face. And that's the real trick and the dilemma that we're still trying to perfect. But we think it's so powerful and so helpful. So thanks to you guys.
John, any final thoughts?
Good work.
Yeah,
it's wonderful that the learning that's going on your end ahead of trying to deal with all the realities of how we connect. It's a wonderful experiment.
Yeah.
I appreciate Ed, you know, the hyper local focus and the resisting all the ways that people can co-opt this, the convenience and leverage of this for purposes other than neighbor to neighbor kind of quality of life. So good work. I agree. Thank you so much, Ed, for joining. And
thank
Maggie,
you guys.
Close?
Yeah. Right, and Ed, this has been probably the liveliest chat that I've observed. So what we're going to do is copy this so you can see it. I think you were not able to follow along, but you may be interested in some of these comments and questions.
I would love it. Thank you, Maggie.
Great. Well, thank you for being here with us today. And I'd also like to thank all the people who joined in. It's a lot of energy going on in there. So if you'd like to know more about Next Door, visit www.nextdoor.com. Ed also provided his email address, ed@nextdoor.com. And so thank you again, Ed. And we hope you'll join us for our next call, which will be on July 15 with Dr. Walter Brueggemann. We're excited about that call. And until then, please visit us on our website, www.abundantcommunity.com. And stay in touch with us. And this brings our program to a close today.
Awesome. A recording will be on the website, won't it?
Yes, it will, within probably this afternoon or by tomorrow.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you all. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.